We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
These two are no Ham and Eggers. Kresh and Keith on WEEI.
The opt-out was for 2019, and that was 2019. All them rumors about retirement and stuff, y'all had me thinking somebody was trying to kick me out. I mean, like I said, I did what I did for the betterment, what I thought was better for my family. Obviously, I feel a little different in the situation I'm in now. I mean, if I had to do it again, if I had to go back and do it, I would absolutely do it again.
That's Dante Hightower yesterday after Patriots practice. We're into hour three. Gresh and Keefe here with you on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com, and the Odyssey app. And I'm sure there'll be a bunch of media people who go, oh, I never said that. I never perpetuated that motion, Dante.
They were out there at all.
No, it wasn't me.
It was a hot rumor, though, for a little while.
That's all it was, apparently, was a rumor. And Dante Hightower, how about that, to hear an athlete say, I thought somebody on the other side was trying to get rid of me with everything that I was reading while I was sitting at home because I opted out because of COVID.
Yeah, because it's going to be really tough for these guys to not read into or see any of this stuff. You just have so many different people talking about you that you're like, what?
And with the reputation of Belichick, I'm sure for some of those guys it's got to be, oh, is Bill really pissed at me that I opted out and all that kind of, like, it can get into your head.
Well, because I did want, I mean, we haven't seen him play in a year, and when he's out there, he's great. Now, he's also a guy who's had some injury issues in the past. He's missed a handful of games here and there, and you wondered, all right, was he going to go the Patrick Chung route? Oh, I was retired for all year, but you know what? This is actually pretty nice. Or was he also a guy that might, you know, have to take a little bit of a haircut?
Right.
Like, would that be a guy that Belichick looks to and says, hey, we love you, but we love you at this number? Like, that happens with some of the veteran guys, and without having seen him for a year, you wonder what kind of camp he was in, but the fact that he's there and looks like he's ready to go, going to be a huge part of the defense.
Now, and looking back at it, in thinking of what you just said, it probably would have been a bad look for the team and for Belichick if he gets Hightower back and he says, okay, you're a year older. Let's get you to $7 million versus 8-9, right? Like,
well, especially when you do have so much cap space. You don't even have the excuse like you did last year where you're like, oh, we're really up against it, and like, do us a favor. He's like, you have all this money still left over.
And there's no Tom to point to. Well, no. Tom's the team guy.
You're paying quarterbacks nothing.
Exactly, so, right.
Yeah, right. You have all that. So he doesn't really need to. I think the next question just becomes, all right, what does the guy look like after missing a year of football? That's sort of the biggest question with him, isn't it?
Very much so. And it looked like he's in good shape. It looks like he leaned out a little bit. Because normally Dante Hightower, he's one of those guys who hid his weight really well. And I'm not saying that as a large humanoid. I'm saying that as a, when you looked at Dante Hightower, you knew he was a big, thick guy. But you never would have guessed that he was pushing 270 pounds with his ability to run like he was, you know, 2 years ago, running around making plays at that size. You get him a year older away from football, but if he's 250 versus 275, you're going to have a guy that is completely re-energized. And oh, by the way, just happens to know how to play the game a little bit. There's no teaching that's going on with Hightower other than what are all the things that we can still do with this dude with all the extra talent that we now have.
Because don't you feel like the way the NFL is going, there's going to be less Hightowers, or at least guys built like that? It seems like there's more and more giant safeties that play linebackers, or they're just so concerned about guys, linebackers being really fast to defend the tight ends, who are now also really, really fast. And, you know, stopping the run isn't as big, or they just become very situational players, whereas Hightower is somebody that can be out there for three downs. Like, I don't know if you're going to have a guy like that size, but it is also not bad in coverage, can rush if you need him to rush. Can also, like, he's just a good all-around linebacker.
He's now to the point at this age where he is a line of scrimmage guy or near it.
Yeah.
And not that they can't put him in coverage, but as you were saying that, the first thing I thought of was, well, they're trying to fit all these different guys into defensive end, the guy who probably should be lined up opposite on the other side of Matt Judon as that kind of stand-up defensive end, that's probably the best role for Hightower at this point.
Yeah, could be. I think he'll, I mean, with all those guys, you're going to see them moving all around. And that's one of the things that they have going for him to sort of confuse the opposing quarterback. Is like, all right, here's Hightower. He's lined up directly in front of me. Oh, now he's over there. Now he's over there. And you're bouncing him around. And then with Van Noy and with Judon, it kind of gives you that ability too.
And with Hightower, he gives you somebody that you're like, okay, he's got the green dot, and we know it's going to be okay.
Right.
And that's with all due respect to Jawan Bentley, who did about as good a job in that role as he could have last year. He's just not a great player.
And it was like all of a sudden he's the captain and really the only true linebacker left. And you're like, all right, you're the guy. Like, wait a minute, I was like the fifth best linebacker a year ago, and now I'm the best linebacker this year. So he was just in over his head.
Therese Hall's looking at that guy to be like, hey, what do I do here? And he's like,
I don't know.
Cover.
I know.
Tackle. Like, you're just giving him the basic, like, peewee football.
That was it.
Sort of a way to go out there and do things. But it is good that Hightower is back. That's a vested veteran. That's a guy who understands the system and can communicate it to other people. Don't forget, you can be a part of this show in a lot of different ways. You can text 37937, Twitter at Gresh Keefe, and on the Twitch chat, weei.com/watch.
Another typical cash giveaway. Here's this hour's code word on WEEI.
This hour's code word is BAND, B-A-N-D. Text BAND to 72881 now for your chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Message and data rates apply. Don't text and drive. Let's get to the Bruins, because the Bruins could be driving right into maybe making a bit of a mistake after listening to Don Sweeney and Cam Neely yesterday, who sort of put the season to bed in their end as well. And let's start with Sweeney, because we'll go step one before we go step two. So Sweeney talking about Taylor Hall and David Krejci possibly returning.
Yeah, and talking with both players at the end of the year, and even when Taylor got here, he's expressed interest, mutual interest, you know, to have him back, have an early conversation with his representatives, and obviously we'll have to see where all the pieces fit together. In David's case, it's very unique in the fact that he would like to continue to play with the Bruins. He's obviously expressed interest that he may return home at some point in time, whether that's next year or down the road, and the family dynamic is important to him. He's asked to have a little bit of time in the next, few coming days to allow him, again, on his own, to have conversations with his family, and then we're going to sit back down and have a real honest conversation. I do believe that David does want to continue to play, and he's made it pretty clear, and we would like to make it clear that this is a place that he should continue to play, should he choose to, at the NHL level.
Is that the first time you've heard the overseas option really mentioned with David Krejci?
No. That's something he even mentioned it early in his career, or at least a report came out, and he said it was true. And then he spoke about it at the end of this year.
Okay.
Where he even mentioned, it's not like he's dying to do it right now. He says it is sort of, he actually had an interesting story about how his mom doesn't speak English and his kids don't speak Czech, and like he would like his kids to sort of understand that culture a little bit more. And so, because he was talking about years before about maybe playing over there, but now he has a wife and kids from here, and so it's just like a whole thing. I don't think he's like dead set on going there now, but it's been discussed. Like Jágr did that, right? Didn't Jágr? I mean, Jágr played here forever.
Well,
but
that's
then
the thing,
playing.
Yeah. Until he couldn't get a contract here, then he went and got like $10 million in Russia or something stupid like that.
So
whatever it was.
So I look at it like Tuukka's going to play here or retire, and Krejci's going to play here or the Czech Republic.
Gotcha.
I don't think either one of those guys play for another NHL team. Although Chara surprised me. I didn't think he was going to just say, all right, I'm going to go play for the Washington Capitals. So anything can happen, but just based on what these guys have said in their end of season press conferences, what Sweeney and Neely have said, it seems like they're either here or not. So they, in other words, they have another option, but maybe not another NHL option.
Well, there you go. And that's my first thought was, well, that's negotiating. That's trying to create a little bit of leverage to at least, get to whatever number that David Krejci wants to get to. And it's interesting that Sweeney mentioned that, and the whole, we're going to have an honest discussion. So it's the, sounds like he has the Chara talk coming to him.
Yeah.
Not that, hey, we don't love you, but we only love you this much.
Yeah, and I think Krejci, you could offer him a low number, but also where their stance is on Krejci, I think really depends on, is there a second line center out there, mm-hmm. more likely via trade, maybe free agency, that they really like, and they would pay more or the same that they would pay Krejci, but he's younger, and they think that's the way to go. Because I don't think it's just, hey, we'll promote Charlie Coyle to the second line. That won't work. I think he'll be frustrated with that.
Yep.
But if there isn't a center out there on the horizon, then I think why not bring back Krejci, assuming he takes a major pay cut.
Right, if he wants like seven.
And say, well, sorry, then you're not, okay, not going to be here.
Then it's not going to work.
Because everybody's dying for this turnover, this change. I still think you only have four old guys. Two of them are still playing great. Bergeron and Marchand are playing great. Tuukka Rask, when he's out there and when he doesn't have a torn hip, was playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. So that's another discussion for another time. But it really comes down to Krejci. Yeah, I don't want him being one of my highest paid players. But if he wants to come back for a year at $3.5 million, you know, a lot worse. You're paying Coyle 5.25, and he stinks. So I would bring Krejci back, but only at the right price.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Bergeron and Marchand, because Cam Neely talked about both of those guys, and I'll be curious for what Bruins fans are going to think after they hear this.
I can tell you this. I know that Marsh and Berge, understandably, would like us to take another run, which, you know, if we get the pieces signed that we'd like to, I think it's worth taking one more shot at it here, depending on what we can do on the back end as well. You know, Tuukka is up in the air with his surgery, so we'll see where that goes. But, you know, we're pretty confident in our goaltender with Jeremy Swayman and also Vladar. I mean, haven't seen enough of Vladar, but Swayman gave us a little bit of a taste of what type of goalie he could be in the National Hockey League, so we feel pretty comfortable starting the season with him.
Boy, there was a lot of caveats in there, and it didn't. You know what it sounded like? It sounded like Cam Neely kind of saying, this window might be a little closed.
Yeah, and I think the Tuukka thing has to alter whatever their thinking was. You know, either it's like a clean break, or we definitely wanted him back, but now it's like, well, he might be back by February.
Well, do you think it's that? Because the way Neely positioned it was, if we can get what we want, and back end as well. He almost made it sound like there's a plan in place, but if it doesn't work, then it's the what in the world are we going to do, and are we going to have to pivot? Because the way Cam made that sound, it was, we know what we'd like to do, but like left the door open that if they couldn't pull it off, because I guess it's this. Is there enough belief in the core that is left here, because Char is gone, is there enough belief in the core that is left here to try to go at it for two or three more years? Because I don't see the Bruins being a team that will load up and try to take a one-year run to win it just to satisfy Marchand and Bergeron.
No, but that's where you try to find that move that is both. And it occasionally happens where you help your team now, but you also set yourself up for the future. And so Taylor Hall, like, who would have thought at the beginning of the year, once he signed with Buffalo, that they were going to get Taylor Hall? And I know he wasn't great the second round of the playoffs, but he was a big upgrade on that second line.
He's a guy who we all want here.
So you want him back, but I didn't think he was going to be a part of it. So maybe there is somebody else out there. I don't know if trading, because again, if you're talking about breaking things up, isn't it really Marchand and Bergeron? And to me, it doesn't make any sense to get rid of them. And maybe,
but does it make sense to try to win with them and willingly let them get old, and then maybe be left holding the bag for a year trying to figure out how to sort of restock the organization?
Well, so that's just it. I think if you're trying to win with those guys, it includes Pastrnak, it includes McAvoy. It's not trading them away for other dudes that are in their 30s to make a run, because those guys are both elite right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to, you know, make the rest of the roster better anyway. So whether you traded Bergeron and Marchand away to sort of add young pieces and draft picks and kind of expand there, you are still going to hang on to Pastrnak and McAvoy, right? And so now, why not add to it? Why not trade draft picks or try to get creative? You're going to have a lot of money, because either Tuukka and Krejci either aren't back or they are for a lot less. So either way, you're saving money. And then you can make decisions on a lot of your other free agents who you can probably just let go if you really want to turn over on the roster. I'm also, and I know it wasn't Don Sweeney, but I'm also still, I think, scarred from the last two times – the Bruins traded away a major, major player. So they traded away Joe Thornton. Again, the franchise, not Sweeney. But they traded away Joe Thornton and got garbage for it. They traded away Tyler Seguin, got garbage for it. So the whole idea of trading away a star player and getting like all these young picks and players back in return and like that'll turn the franchise around, like they couldn't have done a worse job on either one of those deals. So I don't expect trading Brad Marchand, who is one of the best players in hockey right now. You're like, yeah, but he's kind of old. It's like, all right, but he's also one of the reasons why you even made it to the second round. And this isn't like Chicago. Like, a couple years ago, Chicago, their run was over. Mm-hmm. They still had Kane and Taves. And guess what? They still have Kane and Taves. And they're not winning. They're not even making the playoffs with those guys. Whereas Bergeron and Marchand, you're at least still a playoff team. And I know the goal is to win the cup, but you're not that, you're not so far away like you're looking up at all these teams in the standings like the Blackhawks.
Because to me, that's what this is going to come down to. Are you willing to half-age out to take one more run with those two guys being the centerpieces? Because if you look at the way Pittsburgh operated for a while, right? Pittsburgh had their stars. And then when the next crop of young players came up, they didn't have enough money to be able to pay those guys. So that's why Pittsburgh would always make these trades of a young player who's about to go into free agency or about to cash in that they couldn't afford. And they would constantly be tweaking that roster around Pittsburgh, and they were able to find a way to make it work. And now when you look at them, Crosby and Malkin in name, really good players. I think we like, and we know that they're all-time legends, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But you wonder if from the Pittsburgh standpoint, it's like, okay, when do we hit the reset button here? When do we have to hit the reset button here? And you're right. There is the, do you have enough faith in all of these people in the organization, Cam Neely and Don Sweeney included, for them to retool this, and that Marchand and Bergeron are going to be special enough for the next couple of years to warrant being the guys that you build around? Or is it Band-Aid time and you have to consider ripping it off? Because what Neely said there wasn't exactly, we got a plan, we love our guys, we know what we're going to do. It's kind of, well, if we can do this and if we can do that, then we can do this.
But I think that part of that to me is promising, though, because it's not like, hey, we're going to bring back Tuukka and Krejci at all costs, and we got to keep the group together.
Oh, no, now that's,
it's not that at
that,
all.
I think they know that's a death blow. This really comes down to, are you building around your version of Crosby and Malkin the way Pittsburgh has?
Yeah, and that's what they got to do rather than trade those guys away. And so now you're still looking for a supporting cast and you're looking for star players. Like, you're looking for all of it if you trade away Bergeron or Marchand. If they weren't playing as well as they were, I guess they wouldn't have as much value. But at the same time, I would at least understand it. But those guys are playing great. Like, that's not your problem at all.
No, it isn't. But they're your dangle. Because to your point, you're not getting rid of McAvoy, and you're not getting rid of Pasta. So the only other two that have that value, that maybe there's a team out there with the whole, hey, I got this guy at X money, but I got this young player that I could attach to it. Something like that.
I just look at, if there are other moves like, you know, and I know he got hurt, but Lazar, and then Riley with Hall. They added all those guys, didn't really give up much to get them.
Right.
And they all kind of fit under the cap. If you're able to do moves like that in the offseason, beef up your defense.
Bring back Carlo, probably.
Have Carlo back, but also have some Carlo insurance.
Yeah.
Probably say goodbye to Miller, so you're not even relying on him at all.
You love him, but you have to.
Can you tweak it enough? Get rid of DeBrusque. Send DeBrusque out on the first train leaving and get somebody else in here that actually tries. The one other takeaway I had from that whole thing was Swayman, goalie number one, start the year. So it sounds like.
I agree. I totally agree. And it's the we'll figure out, too. Yes, yeah. I agree on
so
that.
I was like, oh.
Here's the other thing, too. I think last year in building the team, it was we're going to try to build it the best we can. And then it turned into this, you know, goofy division setup and all that. Now you're going back to the, at least in theory,
you should be
going back to the traditional setup. So now you kind of get back into the, we got to beat Tampa. We know Montreal at least made a conference final this year. So I wonder if the team building exercise is a little more geared towards getting out of the Eastern Conference and then take your chances in a cup final. Whereas with this year, it and I don't know if it's, I didn't think it was seismic, don't get me wrong, but I think you're going to build the team a little more differently to make sure you get out of the Eastern Conference because you know the teams you're going to be going up against.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And I just think that, you know, Bergeron and Marchand are signed. Bergeron has one more year. Marchand has a bunch more years, and it's for really, really good value. And they're playing far beyond what that value is. So unless you hear what the trade is, and there's some sort of Brooklyn Nets deal that is out there.
Mm.
But the reason why I don't even think it's the Nets deal is Pierce and Garnett were already a little bit way past their prime at that point.
Yes.
Whereas these guys aren't. So I know it's difficult to, you know, improve your roster. But for example, you're like Jack Eichel's name gets brought up a lot.
Ugh, yeah.
So Jack Eichel makes $10 million a year.
Mm-mm.
So, okay, he's younger than Bergeron, but how much more production are you even really getting? And then how are you going to be able to build the team around that guy? You're basically paying him the same amount as you are your top two guys combined.
What you're trying to find is a team that feels like they're close or maybe a player away, and they have potentially a young center to dangle and maybe another piece as well to be able to dangle if you considered moving on from one or both of either Marchand or Bergeron.
Well, and that's the other point is a Bergeron or Marchand trade would probably only go to a good team, right? Because those guys are in their mid-30s.
Absolutely.
Why would a bad team want them? But then if they're giving you first-round picks, in the 20s, you're not even going to get the next guy.
Yes. Well, that's why the players matter. Like, the pick, okay, fine. Like, yeah. You know, like in the NHL, it's not like the NFL or the NBA. Like, I don't think Don Sweeney's going to become Sam Presti all of a sudden and start, like, banking all these first-round picks. But, yes, it's the – this is where, at least for someone like me, and I am more than willing to – like, I don't know the Western Conference – as well as I would know, the National Football League and the NFC and stuff like that. So that's where you get into, is there an apple of Sweeney's eye out there? Or is there somebody that Cam is horny for and says,
right,
okay, that's the guy that we can do with this and we can have a five-year run? Because I don't know about you, but if you're building it around Marshy and Bergeron, it's probably 2 years max.
Yeah, it is, but don't you think they're still playing at such a high level that in a couple of years, it'll then be McAvoy and Pastrnak's team? And you're going to look at it like Pastrnak and the Bruins, McAvoy and the Bruins. And if those guys are still there, I don't think they're just going to be bums overnight.
No, I don't think they're going to be bums overnight.
But then my point is, if you trade those guys away, now you're just fingers crossed that the young players and picks develop into something to sort of run with McAvoy and Pastrnak
three years
from now.
Do you hope you can continue to leg it out with Bergeron, or do you have to move him to find your next Bergeron in a trade, and then the picks are the sweetener? I mean, it's a tough decision because we all love the guy, and he's not playing badly, but that was a pretty interesting comment there from Neely because he sort of left all the roads open. Whereas it sort of felt like from Sweeney, it was like, hey, man, Hall, Krejci, we know we won with them.
Right.
We like these guys.
Right.
A little different tone there. But good stuff from the Bs. And what a great problem to have, by the way, is that you have aging superstars where it's, okay, how much longer can we ride these dudes? We'll get to some NBA coming up next. But first, Smiley Shime is going to trend.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Did you know you can watch Gresh and Keith? Just go to WEEI.com/watch or twitch.tv/BostonWEEI.
Beautiful crossover by Durant and puts it home. Durant with the pull-up. Yes! Durant off the head fake over Tucker. Jay Tucker defending Kevin Durant. Takes it to the rim. Durant out to Green for three again. Beautiful pass by Hardman. Durant lays it home. Durant using the screen for three. Yes! Rush the defense by Milwaukee now. Durant fires and...
Marv Albert, one of the final games he'll be doing here pretty soon, but he didn't need to be on fire last night because Kevin Durant was 49 points in the Nets Game 5 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. 1234, Gresham Keefe here with you on the WEI Sports Radio Network. Hello to the network stations, Providence, Cape, Portland, Springfield, Keene, New Hampshire, and Worcester. And, well, the guy put the cape on last night, and I know that Jeff Green helped him, but that was a whole ball of Kevin Durant, who played 48 minutes, by the way.
The whole game.
Actually played some defense along the way as well. And there's a lot to dislike about the personality of Kevin Durant. But God almighty, when you look at, what was it, 49, 16, and 10? And
17, 10, three steals, two blocks.
All right, so there were only three other people in NBA history who did that in the playoffs. One is LeBron. One was Oscar Robertson. And I'm blanking on who the
Barkley
other one.
Barkley had a game close. There was a game that they were talking about last night. It was a similar game when he was with the Suns as far as like 40-plus and 15-plus and whatever. But
what Durant did last night was the stuff of legend, let's say.
It's maybe the best game I've ever seen. And I definitely have a little recency bias. Like, you know, I'm one of those guys. But I think back to LeBron James with the Heat had a game at the Garden. I think it was Game 6 East Finals where it was just insane. It was, like, unfair. Like, you weren't going to beat him that night. He played so well. Similar stat line, too, I think. But Durant was awesome, and he needed to be. No Kyrie Irving, and they had, in quotes, James Harden.
Oh, what'd you make of his play? I mean,
I do give him credit for getting out there.
I'm with you.
You know, he's missed the all of this series. He, believe it or not, played 46 minutes and scored 5 points.
Shocked by that.
5 points. Guy couldn't buy a bucket. Just couldn't do it. So they needed a good Jeff Green night. They got another pretty good Blake Griffin night, who, by the way, is the Detroit Pistons supposed to be looking at him like, dude,
what were you doing?
Gives you a little effort when you're here with us. It wouldn't kill you. But Durant was so good. But also the Milwaukee Bucks, man, they are choke artists. I think you have to give them as much blame as you give Durant credit.
That team will not win. As currently constructed.
They freak out. They had a big lead. They had a big double-digit lead at the half. They go into the third quarter, and Barkley was all over for them last night for not going small. Like, they left Brook Lopez out there a long time on Jeff Green, and Green, like, torched them. And they easily could have just gone to Bobby Portis. They didn't. And then late in the game, when you have a guy in Giannis who, not only can he not shoot threes, he can't shoot free throws, and just the offense kind of bogs down to a stop. They had one play where down by two with like under 15 seconds to go, Middleton tried to make like a tough pass to Giannis. He just like bobbled it, goes the other way. Like, they just, I don't think they can close the game either.
Well, I agree, and a lot of that comes back to Giannis.
It does.
He's athlete. That's him. He's just
super athlete.
He's not a center. He's not a forward. He's not a great three-point shooter. He's not a great free throw shooter. He's just an athlete.
And he has, you know, always has great numbers. So you're like, wow, 34 and 12, not his problem. It's like, well, yeah, but he's not that end-of-game killer closer. Not that every best player needs to be, you know, 85% at the free throw line, but it's just what an advantage it is to at least have somebody who has the ball in their hands that you can't just foul and put on the line.
They're not functional. That's the problem. Like, in the fourth quarter, that is not a functioning offense where you can really count on anyone. And that shot, the Durant hit the three that put him up, I think it was 109-105. I mean, he's like falling backwards, and that thing goes in. He really is.
Because even the other night when they were like, P.J. Tucker played great defense. He tried. P.J. Tucker's a tough guy, but Durant just missed shots the other night. Last night, he was making his shots. It really doesn't matter, I think, who's defending him. He's just that good. But that was the Bucks' chance. I know the game was in Brooklyn, but with no Kyrie and just such a banged-up James Harden, if you don't win that one, because now Harden's going to be a little healthier tomorrow night. Who knows with Kyrie? Like, they're not going to win this series.
They missed their chance, absolutely. Now, there are some guys who are in the NBA who were coaches who will not necessarily be missing any paychecks. They'll be getting what they call mailbox money for a while. So earlier today, Stan Van Gundy, the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, gone after 1 year. Scott Brooks, Washington Wizards, gone as head coach. So we're now, I do believe, up to six head coach openings right now in the NBA, and the Celtics are one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And now it feels like there's a little bit of a land rush, so to speak. So the older, stodgier, maybe can't connect with the modern day superstar athlete coaches. A couple of those guys got popped, and now we're hearing names like Sam Cassell and Chauncey Billups, but not only Becky Hammon, but also Teresa Witherspoon now is apparently one of these candidates and was on the staff, I guess, in New Orleans.
I didn't even know she was on the staff. She's going back to like the early days of the WNBA, like the early like U.S. Women's Olympic teams. Mm-hmm. Teresa Witherspoon.
She's a great player. Yeah. Like legendary WNBA player.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, though. I mean, if you look at some of the turnover right now in the NBA, if you were an old white or even a young white, you're kind of out.
If you couldn't connect, let's put it this way. If you're using words like fella, you're probably out.
Like, I'm just going through it. Like,
this is a white.
Brad Stevens is out. Stan Van Gundy is out. Scottie Brooks is out. You mentioned Stan Van in there.
Well, who was the guy? Terry Stotts out.
Terry Stotts, good one. Nate Bjorkgren.
What if LeBron James were white?
That was the Indiana guy. So,
and Steve Clifford was the Orlando coach, right?
What do they all have in common?
They're old and white.
Old white guys that didn't play in the league. Scottie Brooks actually played the league.
He did. You,
for the most part.
And Brooks, I think this was his second tour of duty as a head coach or something. Because he was in Orlando for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
He was in Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay.
Brooks was in Oklahoma City. And so it's one of those things where that one, at least according to Woj, was they couldn't reach an agreement. So it was a mutual parting of the ways, I guess. Fine. But so what's going to happen now, and I think this is pretty fascinating, is you have a bunch of candidates like Chauncey Billups and Sam Cassell, like the former player route. Even Jason Kidd, who's both a former player and a retread because he's already been a head coach. So he's kind of both of those things. But it was the guy that Damian Lillard really wanted. So the question is, now that you've all of a sudden seen a bunch of job openings pop up, where are they all going to go? And there's all these teams seem to have guys that might be teetering on the, am I going to demand a trade?
Right.
Bradley Beal in Washington, Damian Lillard in Portland. I think the younger guys like Tatum and Zion, they're not there yet. They're not, but it's worth keeping an eye on.
But this hire could affect that thought process in a few years.
And that's why I also think if you get all these guys on the Olympic team together and they start talking and they're like, hey, we just hired Chauncey Billups. That's pretty cool. Like, yeah, who'd you guys hire? They're like, oh, we got Mike D'Antoni in here. Like, ugh. You know, like depending on what the reaction is to some of the players, it could help push somebody out.
It's dicey now, and you have to hope that because the Celtics were the first or one of the first teams to have an opening, that they're a little further along in the process now that everyone is trying to jump in. Because I do not know if there is a hard and fast Rooney rule, so to speak, in the NBA. I don't think they've had to go down that road. And the only reason I bring that up is let's say, you know, the owner of the Magic wakes up and says, yeah, I'm naming this guy head coach. And there wasn't this big interview process because the owner just said, damn it, I own the team and this is what I'm going to do. They could jump the line. So you have to hope, at least here in our backyard, that the process has been ongoing and is near completion. Think about it. If you're Sam Cassell, Washington, Portland, Boston, they all offer you the head coaching job. What are you going to take?
I think Boston. I think Tatum.
Is this still the best of the openings?
Well, I don't know.
In terms of the superstar. Because look, Indiana, I mean, Indiana's a mess. Well, I'm not a mess.
No, they're not a mess, but they would be, I would say Orlando.
On the list.
Orlando's the worst job.
Yeah, by far, I would agree.
I think Indiana and Washington are also both bad jobs.
Very close, yep.
I think New Orleans is very enticing. Mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram and, of course, Zion Williamson.
Right.
I think New Orleans is enticing. I think Portland, there's more pressure because if you keep Lillard, you need to win now. Whereas Boston and New Orleans, you have a young group that you can grow with. So I think Boston and New Orleans are kind of on a similar path because you really just look, who are the star players? And then Portland's a little bit different because their best player is, you know, 30 or whatever.
And that Washington job, too. Yes, you have Beal, but
Beal and Westbrook.
Well, but that's the thing. Might a player be like, yeah, I know what Westbrook is, and I don't want to deal with that. I almost wonder if, as crazy as it sounds, because people do love him, and he's a great player, he's got great stats, but if you're a former player, you're like, okay, I've dealt with that headache before. I don't want to go down that road.
That just seems like a mess, and it seems like Washington will never, ever go anywhere.
That's
like,
right.
Regardless of what
they
have.
Come on, Bradley.
It's not happening.
Come on up, friend.
So, I mean, yeah, there are definitely some enticing jobs, though. Again, between Portland, New Orleans, and Boston.
Are we done?
Indiana's not that far.
You think we're done, or is there anybody else that might be teetering? I don't think any of these playoff teams. I mean, unless could you see Ty Lue getting popped? Although it'd be tough because Kawhi's
hurt.
Now if they
Kawhi
can beat
out. No, and Ty Lue, this is his first year there, so or
but that owner
second
is
game or second whatever. Yeah,
you know, he's got a ton of money, and B he's a bit excitable.
You know who honestly should, but I don't think they'll do it. Is watching this series unfold. Mike Budenholzer.
Agreed.
The Bucks, and Barkley was all over them yesterday. He's like, they just do dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they should have won that game. And they do a lot of dumb stuff, and I think a lot of it you can kind of point to the coach. Now, one of it is Giannis is probably a difficult guy to, you know, figure out
because he's
played like at an MVP level the last 3 years. But as a coach, it's your job to maximize that player. So if they want to be bold, I think Milwaukee could be an opening.
Wow.
If they lose tomorrow night, they would have to think about
that
it.
That would be something. It really would be. And it would be another middle-aged, older, white
It'd
head
be a,
coach.
Seventh
be
white,
run.
Seventh white out of there. Now, my question for you is, do we get, whether it's Lawson, Hammond, Weatherspoon,
oh, yes.
One of these six jobs goes to a woman?
I think might be two.
Maybe.
Because, again,
it seems like the candidates are pretty good.
The New Orleans connection there,
right.
It seems like that might be an easy slide. Hey, quickly, Phoenix Suns point guard Chris Paul has entered the NBA's health and safety protocols out indefinitely, jeopardizing the stars' availability for the Western Conference Finals. I know there's a guy, John Gambadaro, who's worked in Phoenix forever. Mm-hmm. I saw his Twitter, and he had put out that CP3 had been vaccinated like in February. So this might be like the Yankees a couple weeks ago with their coaches. These might be breakthrough cases if he got it. That's the other thing. Was this something in the NBA protocol, or was this a false positive? You know what I mean? Like, it makes you wonder what could be going on.
I think it's a little alarmist, though, because all the headlines are Chris Paul out indefinitely.
Right.
And you're like, all right, even if he goes in, but now we're getting word that he has been vaccinated. So they got to kind of figure out that part of it. But they're kind of – the Suns are waiting for their opponent. The Clippers and the Jazz have at least two more games. They play tonight, and let's say the Jazz win because there's no Kawhi. Well, you still have, then you have tomorrow off, and then you have the next day, and if they win that one. So by the time the series gets going, I feel like maybe he misses a game. I don't think he's like missing. Everybody on Twitter's like, ah, too bad. That's it for the Suns. I'm like, I don't think he's going to miss
kind
more
of agree.
Than a game.
I can understand why people would jump to that conclusion, but I'm sort of with you. Like, a game or two, it doesn't...
And they could even push it a little bit, couldn't
they?
Something
doesn't seem right,
Couldn't they be like, all right, we're going to start you guys on Tuesday? Like, why are we getting just, you know... Like,
well, wasn't it in early March, I think, that the NBA started to roll back some of the protocols a little bit? And I know that was based on vaccination rates and all that stuff. So, something to keep an eye on. Well, now the experts are weighing in and are calling BS on the Cape Cod whale story.
What?
That intel next.
Wherever you're working from, Gresh and Keefe go where you do. Download the Odyssey app or ask your smart speaker to play WEEI.
And then I realized, oh my God, I'm in a whale's mouth. I'm in a whale's mouth, and he's trying to swallow me. And I thought to myself, okay, this is it. I'm going to die.
Oh, yeah, this big whale story, the guy who was in the whale's mouth off Cape Cod.
Yeah, he got out.
Oh, yeah. Well, by the way, for those of you who didn't sort of follow this story, the lobster diver said he was swallowed by a whale off Provincetown, and by the way, he just happened to said he'd like to see Matt Damon play him in the movie.
Oh, would he?
Oh yeah,
that'd
yeah,
be
yeah.
good.
Oh,
he could
sure.
do the accent.
Sure, be about a 5-minute farcical story on Fark.com.
Maybe a short. You're thinking?
Yeah. Well, because on Monday, NBC Boston published an article. They spoke with Dr. Peter Corcoran, who runs the Marine Mammal Conservation Program at the New England Aquarium. I dare say the man would be an expert.
I would say so.
He told the outlet, quote, being accidentally swallowed by a feeding whale That just never happens. And while he admits a humpback whale could theoretically scoop up a human in its massive mouth while feeding,
of course,
his comments make it hard to believe that Packard spent 30 seconds inside the mouth of the animal before being spit back out. Now, the New York Post also went in on this as well.
Well,
they contacted a doctor at the hospital where the lobsterman was treated.
Yeah.
And who questioned injuries. If a whale was actually responsible for the minor injuries he was treated for prior to being discharged.
Okay.
They said that anyone who, quote, ascended from a 45-foot depth in 20 to 40 seconds would almost certainly show signs of damage stemming from such a sudden change in pressure known as barotrauma.
Well,
so the fact that Packard managed to swim away with both his eardrums intact is another red flag.
So maybe the guy is just special. You know, maybe he's able to not only go inside the whale's mouth, survive this pressure thing.
Oh, he's special.
There could be a little bit. I mean, kind of fluky things. Like the guy says, you know, he doesn't believe it, but he's never seen it before. First time for everything, I would say. You never know.
Shime,
I know you guys didn't buy it.
Shime and John are way. I think Shime said he's way, way out on this, if I remember the quote correctly.
There's no
out.
Chance this guy got swallowed by a whale.
I'm completely.
There's way too many holes in this story. Like, remember the dude? Remember
blow
the.
Holes. Literally.
That's funny.
It's a whale joke.
Remember the Super Bowl Squares dude in Buffalo a few years ago for the Patriots-Rams Super Bowl who, like, claimed he got kidnapped by people who, like, thought...
Yeah, but that was like a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, but he was, like, he was right. He claimed he was in the car for 3 days, and
but
they were like...
But he literally got money out of that. Right, what does this guy get?
But he was nothing. Like, the cops were like, okay, but you didn't, like, urinate yourself or anything in those 3 days that you were gagged in this car, and the guy was like,
I was dehydrated.
It's like the second you poke holes in this story or that story, it just completely falls.
This guy just likes the spotlight, though. He just wants people to talk to him.
He's an attention
kind
seeker.
Kind of a lonely guy, probably.
Should we get him on the show?
Yeah.
Should we get him on the show? Should we talk to this guy?
I don't know.
We could just hang out with him socially, maybe.
Nah.
I mean, I could just make up a story about how I got eaten by a whale one day. You can't disprove it.
Oh, hey, don't forget. You also have to come up with the story that you survived a plane crash in Costa Rica, according to Reddit. That was another thing connected to this guy as well. Mm-hmm. That I think tall
these
tale,
things do happen in threes, so I would look for him to get struck by lightning soon.
So what's his third bullcrap story that he's going to roll out, and then it'll be on...
kicked by a horse.
Dark Side of the Trolling or something like that. Here's another guy who's just feeding us bunk.
So he's just in it for... Or what, the local news story? Is that really what people do? Really? What is that? What do you get out of that? Not much.
More attention than you had yesterday?
Yeah, but now they get haters like you guys out there.
It's just clicks. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous.
Seriously. Well, we're not haters. We just don't care. We're just like, he's lying. I don't really care.
Yeah, this is now gone to peak bullcrap. With this.
All right. Well, has he spoken out since all these people have come out?
I have not seen any rebuttal of this.
Sticking by a story.
Yeah.
Good.
That's what you do. You know what he is? He's sitting back in some one-room shack down there, you know, slamming the latest lobster roll that he caught himself. And he's saying, look at these idiots talking about me.
I still believe him.
I wonder if Big Lobster is going to come out against this guy.
Maybe.
Something like Big Whale will come out against this guy.
Oh, Big Whale's going to be pissed.
You would think so, right? They need to protect themselves. Like, whales are supposed to be killer animals.
Shave the whales.
So
I've always said that. Big shave the whales guy.
That was like a Jeopardy question.
Yeah.
What did Shime girlfriend do last night? Shave the whale. No, that's mean. Aww. I'm sorry. I know.
What's wrong with you?
I don't want to give him
shot. He's actually on your side in this whale.
I know
case.
He is.
I also don't shave.
I don't even.
This sounds like your car crash story, Gresh.
What? Shime?
This dude's like, I fell asleep at the bottom of the ocean. Whale ate me.
Oh, no. I have insurance reports on my...
Insurance reports of nobody who was present.
No, but this could also be a case of, you know, he was supposed to be somewhere or something like that. Maybe his wife. I don't know. I don't know the whole personal story.
And the whole
story,
diving for the lie.
He was late to a recital or something.
Eaten by a whale. Can't question that.
It's the lobsterman version of dog ate my homework.
Yeah. Oh, I can eat my whale. Like, you did? You should probably tell somebody. Like, nah. So maybe that's what it was. He was using it as an excuse.
He slipped it in casual conversation.
And then
with
his family's like, you've got to tell the local media.
Do eels freak you out as much as snakes?
Yep.
So if a giant eel came along and fake swallowed you, would you die from a heart attack inside there and not be spit out?
I saw an eel snorkeling once and it scared the crap out of me. But snakes are worse. They're still worse. But like that one eel that sits in the Boston Aquarium and you walk around that center tank and he's always in a little hole staring at you and his eye follows you when you walk by. Scary as crap.
Can't do it.
Oh, I don't like him. I do not like him.
Yeah, good for the experts to come out and kind of prove what we all thought anyway. Coming up, has the ship sailed on Eddie Rodriguez? And we'll talk to Andy Hart from Pat's Camp next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.